Hello, and welcome to Manga Splaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who have not read much manga before. Hosted by myself, David Brothers, Deb Aoki, Christopher Butcher, and Chip Zdarsky. Follow along with our show notes and reading lists at mangasplaining.com. This week, we are taking a walk on the wild side, let's say. This week on Manga Splaining, we are going to put our fans to the test by making them read Akira Hiromoto's Raw Hero, translated by Ko Ransom, lettered by Phil Christie, and published by Yen Press. This is the book that I like it a lot. It's extremely sleazy, and it makes me feel slightly guilty about liking it because theoretically this stuff is bad, but when I read this, I laugh a lot, and it's really, I don't know, like it hits a note that not many things do, despite being very over the top and even grotesque in some parts, like grotesque in the sense of being out of proportion. And the short version of what this series is about is that Chiaki has several younger brothers. He's the oldest in the family. That their father has passed away. He's the one in charge, and they are dead broke. Like, they can't afford chicken skewers. They use plastic bags as backpacks. It's really bad. And he keeps bombing job interviews until one day he stops a young lady from being molested on the train and finds out that she was not being molested. It was a sex game. And the guy who was doing the groping side of the sex game offers him a job, going undercover with some supervillains, basically. Things get much worse from there. The art is very explicit, so there should be probably a content warning for shady sexual things going on.
It was, I found my hard copy of this. It was wrapped for your pleasure.
Yes, this is definitely a shrink-wrapped book. And I feel like I should, like reading sleazy stuff, exploitation comics, there's a little guilt that comes with it because it's exploitation. Like, it's theoretically bad. It's a little bit edgy. But at the same time, I think this stuff really strikes a nerve that maybe more mainstream works wouldn't. So I wanted to bring it to the Manga Splaining crew. You know, Deb always brings us very award-winning and like high-class works. Chris always brings us like the heartstring tuggers, things make us weep. Chip is our ingenue. He's the one who's into the cool stuff. He'll bring us things based in enthusiasm. And I was like, what is my role here? What am I doing? And I realized that I'm a creep and I'm a loser. I don't know what I'm doing here. So with that said, Chris Butcher, not to call on you first. I know we tease you a lot, but I'm genuinely curious here. What did you make of Raw Hero?
It wasn't until your introduction that I remembered what this is like. I was like, God, this is, I was reading this and I was like, this is like something I liked once. And it's a Takashi Miike movie. Mm. It is an over the top, like there's so much sex, but it has nothing to do with the plot. It just keeps escalating in bizarre ways. It's gross, but that's like very deliberate. Like, it's very orchestratedly gross, and it reminds me a lot of when I was really into Takashi Miike movies. And I'm not talking like, I'm not talking about the cute one, the Great Yokai War. I'm talking about like the awful ones, the awful Ichi the Killer,
Audition, Graveyard ones. Of Empire.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the one where it just kept getting crazy until they blows up. Spoilers. Never mind. I was reading it. And I read that, I think when you recommended, I quickly read the first 10 pages online as a preview just to see what you were talking about. I'd never heard of this manga before. And I was like, what is going on here? And that feeling never stopped. Like, when I got to the end, it finally actually stopped. And I'm like, oh, I get exactly what is going on here now. But I still couldn't make the connection of like trash cinema. And this is like, you know, and I'm Chip, I'm so sorry if this gets you in trouble. This is like absolutely as if someone who's like a trash cinema auteur is asked to make a Marvel movie. And he's like, oh, I've got a fucking Marvel movie for you. Here we go. Agent Coulson is going to get spanked and maybe penetrated. Like, here we
go. Dario Argento's Spider-Man.
So, yeah, I did not like this a lot. Like, I was like, oh, this is so awkward and so tough to get through. But I also really was like, man, you used to like stuff like this. You used to be like, yeah, shock value, sleaze for sleaze's sake. What's the matter with like wanting to have like filthy sex things happen as like gags? Like, and it's like, Yeah. And it's just something. And so I'm just like trying to put it together, but I think it might be this specific work. I don't think it's like the content of the work. It's maybe just the specific work. And I've been thinking a lot about it since I read it, actually, like way more than it deserves. Way, way more than it deserves. But I'm going to have to put a content warning. Like maybe we need to just record a content warning that goes retroactively before your introduction, just so people know that like, yeah, this is the elephant blowjob. So I think I'm trying to separate my feelings about the content of the work with the actual work itself. And it's weirdly the content I don't have any problem with, like,
interesting
in any way. It's just how it's strung together that I have a problem with. I've got examples. I'll go into it, but maybe we should go on to somebody else.
I'm going to ask Deb last because I know she has some extra context with prison school. So Chip, what'd you think of Raw Hero?
This is the worst thing I've ever read.
Awesome.
And I think anyone listening to this podcast should turn it off right now because we're done here. All right, now that they're gone, this is the best thing I've ever read. It's so ludicrous. I laugh so much reading it. And like, I get that it's sleazy, but like, it's not sexy at all.
No, it's not.
Like, it's just gross. Like, the depictions of everything is just kind of gross and weird. Just the strangest. I'm just going to swear in this episode because this is a swearing episode. This is the strangest fucking angles of shots.
I'm wiping tears out of my eyes right now.
The fact that the groper, in air quotes, that it was actually a sex game, and then even after being found out, he just did it again, and it became another gag. Like, wait, you did it again? Like, very good. You spotted me do it again.
Like, yeah.
And it's always like a giant, like, full page close up of like kind of the weirdest drawn underwear and sweat. Just like, I can't make heads or tails of what's happening.
Oh, honey, it's not sweat.
Well, okay. All right. Maybe I'm cleaning up a little too much for some of our listeners. But it's so, like, even the, as Chris pointed out, the elephant blowjob scene, which is just so crazy. After the elephant sweats out of the end of its trunk, let's say, he goes, "Damn it, look at what you made me do. I used my splash elephant special maneuver offent." So they even wipe away that as being sexual by having that weird bit of dialogue. This is definitely not for everyone. And, you know, I agree with David. You know, obviously the exploitative quality of it does make me kind of like definitely bristle at the idea of recommending it to anyone.
Yeah.
But also, I'm a grown ass man, and reading this, it just made me laugh. And it's not going to change the way I view men or women in this world at this point in my life.
Maybe people
I'm not going to go out and like, yeah, I'm not going to go out and think, I don't even know what the negative thing I would take away from this, really, because anything that's sexual in this is consensual.
Yeah.
Which is a relief. Like, as soon as I saw the groping, I'm just like, oh my God. And like, they're, you know, highlighting it and zooming in on it. I'm just like, oh, why is David doing this to me? But then it becomes this funny, weird consent thing. And then like, as you follow that couple throughout, like, they're just getting up to all sorts of weird stuff in their love hotel. It's just really, really funny and fun.
Awesome. How did you feel about Raw Hero?
I guess walking into this, I kind of knew what I was getting.
Yep, that was it. She left. She's quit the podcast. Did we lose
Deb? Deb, are you there? We cannot hear you, but it says that everything is still on.
This cannot be the guys only episode of this
No
podcast.
Way. Deb, what did you think of Raw Hero?
I'm going to tell you, I walked into this with pure cringe. Like,
yeah.
I thought I was going to hate this. But I got to tell you that I was curious enough to go get volume two.
Oh.
Volume two is way more funny.
Yeah.
Really?
It's absolutely hilarious. That's when it started to kind of like go, oh, that's why David likes this. It starts out with this kind of like cringy masochism, like this poor guy, right? He like thinks he's doing the right thing. He meets the wrong guy who's going to give him a job. And then as the story goes on, that guy, the boss, just gets into stupider and stupider situations. Like he reveals something, he goes, what? And then like, you know, bangs up his car because he's so shocked. And then there's another part where he's like, the main character calls up the boss and says, oh, by the way, I met this super evil villain, like this super most wanted villain. And the boss goes, what? And then he basically scrapes his car against the side of the freeway. It flips over and he goes, get a photo. Anyway, it's just kind of like, and it's like, oh, okay, now I'm getting this. Like, there's this moment where, like, they're fighting, they're electrocuting the dog, and then the girl goes into a sushi bar, and then she comes out with a sushi roll in her mouth, and he goes, oh, she's one of those that has to eat while she's fighting. And then you find out why she went to the sushi bar, and it's like, this is clever. I'm still cringed. I still kind of viscerally have a reaction every time every shot is like a panty shot. Like that shot where like they're looking up at this tall condo and it's framed by the crop by a dripping crotch. It's like
there's a lot like that.
This is the most seinen manga.
yeah.
And it's such a self-aware seinen manga. It's like, heroes and boobs and, you know, wacky hijinks and manly men who get, who blush when they after they get CPR thing. I got my first kiss. You know, it's just like, it's just ridiculous and fun. Obviously it's not for everybody, but I think if you go into it with the right sense of what the hell, you know, just, it's kind of like, I just came back from Las Vegas. It's kind of the same thing. If you go into Las Vegas, kind of like all cynical and shit and like, this is so cheesy and this is so trashy and horrible and stuff like that, you'll have a pretty miserable time or you'll think it's, you're too good for it. But if you go in and you have a couple of those stupid, 24-inch margaritas and you just kind of go, and then you get one of those blinking headlight headbands, you think, yeah, okay, I can have fun with this. And then before you know it, you are having fun with it. Party.
Yeah, this is the Vegas of comics. I think you're right.
Yeah. I jumped on this comic when it came out because I got really into Hiramoto's prison school kind of as a prank.
What?
So it was on sale and I was like, oh, let me check it out. And then I read a few and I was like, okay, like it's kind of like a weird, gross, sexy comic. I kind of get it. But then I read a volume where like the trick that he was pulling became obvious. Which was that, like Chris said, it's like a Marvel movie by a director who does not want to do it. Prison School gets so extreme that I can't believe anyone buys it because it's sexy. Like, there's just, it takes things to such a level. And I feel like doing that is actually really tough for an artist to do. Like, if you're talented at drawing sexual situations, it's hard to make those exact situations not sexy. And yet, And Prison School, I think, ran for like 36 volumes, something like that. And it mostly builds up to a joke that men are trash and on the last page. And it's such like a long, involved, complicated thing for such a basic conclusion, you know?
Yeah. Oh, you should explain what Prison School's about.
I was like, I have to see what he's doing next.
Oh,
man.
Can you?
So Prison School is about the first boys that join an all-girls school. And in true teenage boy fashion, they are quickly put in prison inside the school for being teenage boys, like perverted weirdos.
But it's like peeping or something.
Like, this is extremely sexual. Prison School is even more in your face about it.
Yeah.
Like, all the boys are horny weirdos. There's a legendary scene where one character explains why boobs and butts are like just utterly irresistible. And it has to do with evolution and like the rise of man, crawling on all fours. It's a lot. And it's so much a lot that it becomes incredibly funny, I think. And this book's sort of the same thing. Like, they're just building stupid joke on stupid joke. Like, there's a character named Jellyfish. And she's, you know, a super awesome, evil, you know, whip-wielding lady on the cover of Volume 2. There's an elephant guy. It's like, what kind of superheroes are these? And I realize they're Kamen Rider style superheroes. Like, these are explicitly Japanese superheroes. And Deb, did that change the book for you? Did you pick up on that vibe that they might go out to a quarry and fight to the death sometimes? All right, listeners, welcome back. I don't know if you noticed, but we got a little bit rowdy just before that break, and it was not up to the usual class that manga explaining brings to the table. So we want to bring it back down. We took a week-long break to kind of settle our nerves, and we're back to discuss Raw Hero. And I believe when we broke, we were talking about how it's kind of a Japanese superhero influence, like Kamen Rider style, Super Sentai style, more so than an American comics influence. Because there is, in fact, a scene where a guy with an elephant trunk kind of gets a blowjob from his trunk, and it's a mess. But anyway, Deb, as the expert on Kamen Rider and such things, what did you think of how, like, the superheroes and stuff were depicted in this book?
It seemed like, well, you know, like in American superhero comics, right, where the outfits are very fetishized and
yeah.
very, very much meant to convey power and manliness. Mm-hmm. In Kamen Rider, the villains are all kinds of variations of color plus animal, right? Blue buffalo, green praying mantis. They look they do look like villains, but they also look very ridiculous. But as kind of Chip kind of mentioned earlier, Kamen Rider is ultimately a kid's comic. It's aimed at little boys, and even though grown up men like it. It's a kid's show, and it's a kid's take on superheroes. So, like, yeah, you know, learn your colors and your animals. Like Sesame Street, right? It's not meant to be, like, you know, strike fear in the hearts of men and, you know, or, like, be this archetype of, like, some kind of deep adult psychosis. It's just creature threatening superhero. And so... I don't know. I mean, I just thought the elephant thing was like, okay, you go. And then I don't know how much porn manga you've read, David, and you don't need to answer that because that's deeply incriminating. But answer it.
Yes. I mean, I grew up with the internet. Like, come on.
So in some porn manga I've read, mm-hmm. instead of showing the penis, they'll show an elephant head. Yes, it had to be an elephant.
In this case. Wow,
look
so
for
many
that
levels.
Image in the show notes. That'll be great.
Yeah, I love it because it's so, like you said, it is juvenile. And I mean that in like a very literal sense, like for children. But then doing dirty jokes with it is so, it's like doing a dirty Powerpuff Girls drawing. Like it's weird. But in this, for some reason, it feels like appropriate somehow. And what is a very inappropriate book, I should say.
But it's so funny because it's so jarring. Because
yeah,
like even in the interview scene, there's, I forget the name, is it just Elephant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's the only ridiculous character. Like, the other two are just sexy ladies looking cool and badass. And, like, the other glimpses we get of, like, heroes and villains or whatever are, like, cool, sexy, badass. There's just a guy who's just got, like, an elephant head and a sexualized trunk.
Which is largely obscuring his field of vision.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the worst superhero costumes I've ever seen.
Sorry, dude, Razorback in the Marvel Universe has exactly the same costume, except it's a pig head instead of an elephant head.
It looks a lot cooler on Razorback.
It does.
Yeah.
Put it in the show notes, Chris. Let the audience decide.
That's an Instagram poll right there.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is something. The elephant does one thing that I don't think Chip has seen yet, which is that some manga characters have strange speech patterns. Well, they'll like maybe say the type of animal they are or like say something cute at the end of the sentence. And it doesn't really go for this guy at all. It's just super awkward every time.
I kind of feel like this is a weird translation choice, right? Because in Japanese, elephant is zo.
Mm.
So he could say, blah, 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 zo. Blah, 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 zo. Blah, 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 zo.
That makes way more sense.
But there's no short way to say elephant, right, in English. So he has to say, blah, 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 elephant. Blah, 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 elephant. Blah,
that's,
blah, blah.
That's interesting because it really changes the joke. Like, I guess the decision is to drop that or to add a fent at the end of everything, which is so ludicrous.
Yeah.
Like it really changes that joke. Oh, I loved it.
It's funny that you guys are calling it out because that was like my favorite part is like, oh, they gave this character so much character that it's like ridiculous.
Yes.
Totally ridiculous.
Yeah. Like, yeah, no, I loved it. About don't get me wrong.
Fonts and stuff like
this
that.
This is all like admirable. So good.
Yeah. I want to ask Co Ransom how he came up with this decision because it.
Yeah.
Like it's funny, like, because the first time he ended with a fent, I'm like, oh, that's okay. I kind of get that. And then once I realized that he was going to do it with every single sentence,
yeah,
it almost killed me. It was amazing.
I have some Kamen Rider trivia, and then I want to pick on Chris a little bit. But the first two people Kamen Rider fight are named Spider-Man and Batman. Building on the animal thing that Deb was talking about.
Wow.
So they know what they're doing. Yeah. But Chris, you had something you wanted to mention from the last episode that you wanted to bring up.
It was a week ago. You're going to have to remind me. I'm sorry.
It was a movie comparison with Takashi Miike.
Oh, yeah. I was like, since we were taking a break, I actually went to re-record my whole opening statement. But yeah, I went back and watched some of Dead or Alive by Takashi Miike. And it was just like, oh, that's what this manga is. Dead or Alive is notorious for having every Miike thing, but all in one movie, and it's really gross. It's a police procedural ostensibly, but it's a Yakuza gang war thing. And the first I think it's 10 minutes are like a nonstop, like quick cut thrill ride through like Yakuza like violence and gore and whatever. It's like you've got to see this movie at least once. And it gave me like the same vibes as the beginning, the first chapter of Raw Hero, where it's like you start off and it's this like shoujo romance manga that is interspersed with this like superheroic fight that's interspersed with this building exploding, that's interspersed with this like close up on a lady crying and she's nude and she's drawing this shoujo manga. And it's just like, and then it cuts to like, all right, we're in a scene again, and it's like normal and boring, and it's like a little familial scene, but it just keeps building, and that weird again has exactly that structure. And if you've never seen Dead or Alive, you're probably a better person than me. I just keep going back to he shows up at like a porn shoot to interview somebody who knows something about this like Yakuza, and it's like a girl like full on having sex with a dog, and you're just like, this is a movie I am watching and there are other people around. And I feel like I saw that in the theater,
wow.
The Toronto International Film Festival.
Yes. The International Film Festival.
It's the con of Toronto. It has Takashi Miike movies back when it was cool. So it's like, yeah, there's like a real like trash cinema exploitation vibe to this that it took me a second. I actually thought it was just bad. In a lot of ways, and it turns out it's like no, it's on a different level, and you're either on this level or you're absolutely not. And I got it by the end, and I think it was when she blew the elephant guy's face that I was like, oh, okay, here we go. Like I get where we are now. We're in a different place than a superhero parody space. I'm good to go.
But it's funny because it goes extreme, but then it corrects itself like really quickly. Like because even that. Directly after elephant guy, you know, gently crouches down and goes, listen, you don't need to do that kind of stuff anymore, Afunt.
And he's crying.
Yeah, no, there's tears coming down. He's just like, you know, things must have been hard on you. But like it's so funny just how it just switches like that.
Mash gets to the secret agent guy getting wrecked by his prostitute, I guess, in a hotel room again. And it's just like the whiplash on this series. Like you have to just be on board because it does not spare your feelings or good taste, frankly.
Yeah. I think Deb will agree that Prison School is kind of similar in that it starts as one thing. You're like, okay, it's like a weird sex comedy. But then, like, it doesn't hit that top of the roller coaster moment and then come down. It just keeps going up and up and up, where the sex keeps getting weirder and weirder and the proportions get stranger and stranger until one of the characters, he was like the big chubby guy, is as tall as a house by the end of the series, and people are riding on him as part of the prison school. Wow. Goes to so many different places, and it's just like what Chris is talking about. And I think it's also here in Raw Hero, where it never stays in one place too long, because there's always like another step to take, another like way to amp up the violence or the sex or the action.
Yeah.
But there's stuff that he makes fun of a lot of things, like when they go off on a mission, the first to die are those without guts. And then the one guy goes like, wow, the guy with the most guts did die. What's going on here?
Like, it keeps poking a hole in the idea of this like super dangerous supervillain team who are actually really kind and caring.
Yeah.
One of them is a dog. The leader is kind of like a loser looking guy named Ryu Hoshi. And I don't know if any of you remember the 90s, but for the longest time, that was Ryu from Street Fighter's rumored real name.
What?
Oh, really?
And I'm convinced this is like some kind of stupid joke about that. It's like so on the nose.
I love that he looks basically exactly like Winter Soldier.
Oh, snap.
like Sebastian Stan as Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and their big nefarious plan is to graffiti. That was also like really funny, just like the white on white graffiti not reading well.
So I've read 4 volumes of this. I have the 5th volume to read.
Wow.
And it stays like this all the time. Like, it's a very different manga when it gets to the part where I'm at. Like, all the characters are better established. The superheroes are more of a presence, but it still kind of isn't about anything. And I think that's one of my favorite things about it, is that it's just sort of like, there's a plot. We'll get to it eventually.
Yeah. There's no larger themes at play here.
No.
Isn't it just about humiliation?
And trust is the weird thing. Like, the humiliation is like the forefront, but then it's also this guy finding a place where he belongs that's full of weirdos.
Because prison school is a lot masochism.
Yeah, very much so.
Spoilers, does he have to continue the charade of being dressed as a lady?
Oh, he gets
several
costumes.
Does he eventually just like it?
Okay. Yeah, he accepts it. I think like is fair. At one point he tells his boss, and the boss is like, oh, I gave you the wrong suitcase, which is great.
Yeah.
But there's something about this kind of series where it doesn't take breaks. It's very edgy, for lack of a better phrase. And it just hits a spot, I think, that you wouldn't get from something more literary, for lack of a better.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, sometimes you need to crawl through the muck a little bit.
It's true.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll tell people, like, it's like LA and San Francisco. San Francisco is quirky, but it takes itself way too seriously for its quirkiness. Mm-hmm. LA is weird, but LA knows how to laugh at itself for being weird.
I could see it.
Yeah.
So this manga, it's weird and it knows how to laugh at itself. And you're either down with it or you're not.
Yeah, it's having fun. It's not taking any swings at anyone. Like, it's just a harmless little bit of fun.
Yes.
It's grossly self-referential in exactly the way you guys are talking about. And the thing that I wanted to bring up is all of the female characters, even the ones that are in like a skin tight bodysuit with their face covered because they're a superhero, are like super sexualized. Like, they're all super sexualized. Like, the skin tight bodysuit shows every bit of almost
camel
every
toe,
bit of female
man.
Genitalia, yeah. Camel toe situation. And as soon as the lead
Chris
character,
was trying so hard not to say that, and then
camel toe is a great word, so let's we'll go with it. As soon as the lead character starts dressing like a woman, he's instantly treated exactly the same as the other women in the series, where he is like super grossly like sexualized, upskirt shot after upskirt shot, like makes a beautiful woman.
He makes a really pretty woman. I almost forget to die.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the joke.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's the author talking about the work that he makes. It's like, oh, this character who's like kind of a nerdy, like wannabe salaryman, the second he is portrayed as a girl, I'm going to draw him like every other girl in the series, and you are going to get every bit of his panties like shown to you, and you're going to get every bit of this and that and the other thing, and you're like, you have to be aware of yourself doing this, because I feel like there's like a real like, this is who I am on every page of this that the author is like communicating. And it's, I haven't seen a lot of work like this in manga, to be completely honest, where it's just like, except in porn. I think porn has a real honesty, manga, hentai, ecchi, that is lacking in a lot of other like, oh, we're being a little sexy here with the comic books, but don't worry, it's going to stay at this certain level because we know we're in a magazine and whatever. It's like, no, 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 this is not that book. And I'm kind of, I don't want to read everything like this, but I'd read volume two of this.
Yeah.
You should read volume two. So volume two is when it really clicked for me. Like, cool. This is funny. Before that, I was just horrified.
I'll take horrified. But what clicked for you?
When the boss, his manager, just like the first time he's shocked, he scrapes his car. The second time he hears something shocking from this guy, he flips the car and it just like goes over the freeway. Like it just amps up and it's like, oh, okay. You're just going to keep dialing it up and up and up and up. And you just don't care. Like,
yeah.
Like the part about like, you know, like, yeah, a few panty shots. Sure. But like framing a shot so that the condo of this guy's dreams is framed by this crotch and legs. And it's lovingly drawn in such detail. I have to wonder what, if this guy ever got arrested and his, you know, like got stopped at the border with his folder of reference photos, holy shit.
Yeah. I'm just imagining giving Freud this manga and him just dropping dead on the spot.
I was wondering how old this comic artist is. Oh. Like, is this feels like a work he's maybe in your 20s?
50s?
No.
He's been drawing for a while.
He's 35 years old.
Oh my God, my age?
Yeah, he's exactly your age, Jim.
It's so funny because like the level of artistry made it feel like he was older, but the subject matter and like just devoting your time to this just felt like a thing that someone in their 20s would do.
Like it has like a Johnny Ryan vibe almost.
yeah, exactly.
But you know what disturbs me about this and Prison School is that I read his previous work, Me and the Devil Blues. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. I thought it was
good.
Really, really good. It was a manga about Robert Johnson, the blues guitarist.
Okay.
And then it was like, it spun it into like some kind of like horror thing where Robert Johnson has multiple fingers and that's why he can play so good. And then Clyde from Bonnie and Clyde somehow comes into the story and it's really well drawn. It's very dramatic and it's about the South. You know, I thought it was a really good manga, but then it was like, oh, and now I'm going to draw women humiliating men. And I'm going to draw women and I'm going to draw lots of panty shots with dripping stuff and like lots of O faces. And like, okay, so you made a left turn towards commercial yes. work. Good for you.
But it feels like the kind of commercial work that's a trick or a trap where you're like, oh, there's like a sexy lady on the cover of this and her clothes are coming off. And then you get it and it's this. And you're like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Would anyone find this sexy?
I think, yeah, absolutely. People are jerking off this 100%.
But it's so strange is the thing.
No. Yeah. I mean, this is the mature episode.
But I feel like the content is almost like an anti Viagra, you know, like the story's not sexy. Like the way things are described in the story, none of it is actually sexy. The way it's drawn is occasionally, but there's nothing where you're like, oh, like I gotta try this out in the bedroom.
Well, I mean, there's a sexiness to
Chris is losing it.
there's a sexiness to forced femininity.
Ah, true. Yeah.
Like the fact that he is like, he feels like he's got to put this outfit on and do this thing and then blow this elephant.
But he's also, there's that. There's the whole first two chapters are about like exhibitionism and public displays of sexual stuff. And like there's so much in here that is like, this is why I thought this guy's an accomplished mangaka for sure. He's not a young dude because it's like self-aware. Like, a lot of people just put their fetishes into manga or their or any kind of work that they make, and they're not really aware that they're doing it. This guy is like very aware of what he is into, and it is on the page, and not only on the page, but he talks about it being on the page as well in the manga itself. So that's why it's like, oh yeah, this guy's a little bit more accomplished because he's not oblivious to what he's doing. You know what I mean? And I think that that's a big part of this. But yeah, that's what I think makes it erotic. I think, you know, I think it's in like an Aerocom, basically, but with superheroes and like superhero tropes.
That's fair.
And I think that that's, I do think that absolutely this is a sexy times book for a lot of people. It's fascinating too, because it doesn't, that kind of thing doesn't exist in comics in the same way here, where something can be simultaneously like, oh, this is like an actual story I want to tell, and I want it to be a sexy time book, and I want it to be a commercial work as well. Like, we kind of push.
I think the commercial work is the sticking point, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with all.
Like, it's interesting. Like, it's like even thinking of like kind of North American like sexy artists, they usually kind of have the bad reputation that goes along with it. Like, the only one I can think of that kind of pulls it off still is Adam Hughes.
Yeah.
And even that is just kind of like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that hate his stuff, but like Frank Cho obviously is like, now just super leans into like, oh, I'm edgy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so much
of
the Western stuff is rooted in pinup comics art instead of porn, which I think is there's a small difference in there. Difference in perspective, maybe.
And the artists that are, without naming names, the artists that are more influenced by porn, it becomes more immediately apparent in their work. And it becomes something that people rail against when discussing why they don't like their work. Whereas I think that there's a lot more of a middle ground in manga where you can be, you can like making pornographic content and want to make stories. And it's not, these two things have to be separate. Like, I know of artists who have been told by editors at Marvel and DC, you're never going to work for Marvel and DC because you did these other illustrations that were too porny. Like, you know what I mean? Oh. That were too, you can draw a female character looking sexy, basically wearing a bikini, and that's her superhero costume. But if she's touching her boobs at the same time, you've crossed a line. And it's like, we've created this like, well, sorry. And that's all of Western society is like, oh, everything's sexy, but don't talk about it because you'll ruin the mystique. Whereas in Japan, there's a magazine, and I bring it up very specifically. It's called, because it's so influential to this podcast, even, it's called Manga Erotics F, and it's no longer being published. But it was the dude who did a manga called Dance Till Tomorrow, started this magazine back in the day. And the stated goal of the magazine was, I want a place where accomplished mangaka can do sexually taboo stories that they couldn't do in their regular jobs. So this is where we got work like Inio Asano's Girl on the Shore that we've talked about previously was serialized in Erotics F. Usamaru Furuya's Lychee Light Club was serialized there. Some of the work by Takeko Shimura, who did Even Though We're Adults, was serialized there. Natsume Ono, like, there's just a ton of creators go to Erotics F to do their like sexually taboo work. And it's not all explicit, but some of it very much is. But it's just, I want to create a space for this because it maybe doesn't fit in other magazine spaces. And I think that that's something that would be like, whenever people try to do sexy stuff, there's always a real blowback, I find, in North America. I think it's against their, like, Spike's, more straight careers.
Smut Peddler, but that's very much a certain bent.
And there's Smut Peddler is great.
And there's like, was it Sunstone?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Sunstone from Stephen Sedgwick.
Yeah. Just huge.
Which was, sorry, and that's huge because there's so little material like that. Like, but is Stepan Sedgwick, did he immediately go back and start doing like variant covers for Marvel and DC? No, like, he didn't. And I think it's going to take a few more years before people in editorial roles there forget that he did that kind of sexy work before.
I mean, doing Sex Criminals, I had to do Howard the Duck in order to prove that I could do non-sexual stuff at Marvel.
Yeah. You're like, we will take something that it couldn't be sexy, but then you made it sexy anyway.
Thank you. Thank you for recognizing that.
Heartrending, actually, that whole,
despair is the sexiest of all. So,
yeah, exactly.
Wow, that explains why you picked this book, eh?
Yeah,
right. But so, would Manga Erotics F, I'm really interested in this, would it be analogous to Penthouse Comics in the 90s, where a bunch of mainstream artists kind of went and did their thing?
No.
More serious. Or arty, I guess.
Not no. The American version of it does make more sense in that way. But penthouse is like, you say something's penthouse, right? And you have an immediate idea of what it's supposed to be, which is more than Playboy. And so a lot of the penthouse comics, I've read all of penthouse comics. It was just a thing we carried at the Beguiling when I worked there. And it was just like, yeah, some people get in there and they want to just tell dirty jokes and do their dirtiest cartoon stories. Whereas Erotic Seth is like, I have a really important story that I want to tell about when I was a girl in high school and fell in love with my cousin who was a girl in high school. And then she goes and gets married. And it's like, I thought we were lesbians together. What did that mean? And it might have a couple of scenes that are a little bit like, woohoo, but like, it's a story first. And I think most of the stuff in Penthouse was about, oh, the artists you love, including Adam Hughes, doing, you know, saucy stories.
Well, there is that thing, like when artists are given the opportunity to like, finally you can do this, they tend to go a bit wild and just like, ah, look at me, I'm doing penises and boobs. So there's not really, because there's not a longstanding culture of it. Like, I think if something like Penthouse Comics kind of continued to today, and it was like kind of a regular part of the scene, then artists would be trying different things there that weren't just like kind of more in your face stuff. Like Chris Onk and myself tried to do a little bit of that with White Trees, the book we did for Image, which had like orgy stuff happening, big hard penises, we went in on that, and
it's great.
But it's part of the story, right? Like, it wasn't just like, oh, we're free of Marvel, we're gonna lose it. And I don't know, like, and we didn't get any blowback or anything from that. The only time I ever got blowback for sex stuff from Marvel was when we got Joe Quinones to do a variant cover for Sex Criminals, and he did our main character with a duck bill on, like Howard the Duck on the ground as Susie was dressed in a trench coat feeding him breadcrumbs. Oh yeah, no, his duck bill was a penis too. It was a dildo. Anyways, this is obviously the mature episode. Yeah, so
put it in the notes, Chris.
Things. Put it in the notes, Chris.
That's what the Photoshop filters are for.
That's the only time I got a call from Marvel saying, hey, you know, maybe not do that. I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I guess. That makes sense.
Chris also had a good point about it being very self-referential, self-aware, because there's a moment on page 156. It's just after they get decimated by the superhero and they're bleeding in the van, where the main character gives their partner CPR. Mm-hmm. And they're like, how does mouth-to-mouth work again? Do you breathe in or out? I don't know. Maybe I can just do both. And this is totally the moment in any other anime where the main character is rescued by like the tough like female character and falls in love. Mm-hmm. And you can see it in all the art. Like, she's suddenly drawn with like a very soft filter. Like, he's got the wide eyes. Like, oh, I can't believe that happened. And calling him a gutless coward is so romantic. Like, they're hitting all the tropes.
Followed up by page 164 when he's like, I've got kissed for the first time.
And yeah.
He's just overcome.
Yeah.
And those soft sound effects, like,
oh, yeah.
Just part of the phrasing with the balls to the wall nature of this series is so good. And I think that's what, like, I don't read a lot of like super TNA focused stuff because I guess I like violence more than sex. I don't know. But this really hit a stride for me where I was just rolling, laughing at the jokes, like at the characters, the choices they were making. And also, like Deb was saying, horrified/disgusted by all the same.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you want to feel a little bit bad when you read something. And I think that this hits like just enough for me.
Yeah.
And I was amazed, like Chip pointed out, it doesn't really punch down at anyone, any like classes of people. Like, it's mean to specific characters, but it's not like super homophobic or racist or something. It's just weird and consistently intensely weird to where you're like, can you do this?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of just the weirdness is spread out evenly amongst everybody and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like how people say, you know, I offend everyone equally, and that's like a sign they're a huge douchebag. This is that, but like for real.
Yeah. I'm like an equal opportunity offender. Yeah.
I think because it's so self-referential, it forces me as a reader to be like, wait, I have to read this closely to get what they're doing, because it feels so on the edge of something like good or bad, even though it's probably neutral in the end. It's just ridiculous.
Neutral? Yeah. I don't know about neutral.
It's not as bad as it could be, but it's not as good as it could be.
Yeah. It's just a nice bit of fun.
Let's get some final thoughts. So, Chris, if I recall correctly, on our last episode, which got way out of control, you were a little lukewarm on the series.
I reread it after that episode because I was like, you guys were liking it. And it's like, I've come around because it's just, as soon as I was like, oh my God, actually talking on that episode, on the first time we tried to record this episode, it was like, oh my God, it's a Takashi Miike movie and it's specifically Dead or Alive. I was like, oh shit, okay. And then I reread the volume and I'm like, I get it now. And I just bounced off of it and I was like, he's good at what he's doing, but whatever he's doing, I don't give a shit about. It was like my first take on it. But now it's like, oh, I get it. It's shocking and it's difficult and it's trying to do all these things that are upsetting and offensive very deliberately. And I think that that's the fact that it isn't targeting anybody, that everybody's feelings are being treated as relatively real. And he's making like the good guys so far just seem awful, like in every possible way.
I can't tell who's the good or the bad guy in this.
I keep forgetting, honestly.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. I think maybe my only criticism is especially with that cover, I sort of looked at it and I was like, oh, so this is going to be a superhero parody. And there's some of that in this, but it's really like, it seems like that's like the excuse and it's not really about that. It's about these like gags, these setups, these jokes, all this kind of stuff. So
it's sort of superhero. It's specifically a Razorback parody. I keep telling you that.
It is. Sorry, you're right. It's specifically a Razorback parody. What group was he in, by the way? Razorback was one of the like serpents. Was he taken over by the serpents? No. Anyway, whatever. Well,
he's a boar. He's not taken over by the serpents. What's wrong with you?
Sorry. I know he wasn't. Oh, there's apparently a film called Razorback. The Marvel villain does not come up first with Razorback.
Weird.
Anyway.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah.
I get it now, and I kind of want to see where it goes. And I
do love it. Okay. We get it. You love it.
It's a pretty big move from where I was the first time I read it.
All right. 10 out of 10 from Chris.
Sounds good. Solid 10. What do you have for us?
I think what Chris was touching upon and what we talked about earlier was you really got to be in the right mood to read this. If you're feeling I had to go into it with a Las Vegas mindset, not a Criterion Collection mindset.
It definitely has the two mindsets.
Well, that's the thing I could come up in just like seconds.
If you look at the books we've chosen on this show, that's pretty close to the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, I all of these, I will always give any book that David picks the benefit of the doubt. Like I always think to myself, David does not pick absolute crap. He'll pick
something. What a compliment!
No, I mean that there's something redeeming and fascinating about this, right? It's not just pure trash. There's something that fascinates David. So therefore, I must find out what that is. And so I'll keep reading, you know, whereas I think sometimes like I'll read like a first chapter of something that like this and go, oh, hell to the no. And I'll throw it across the room. like Kurt Hassler and your licensing choices. I have questions for you. But somebody has to license these things because somebody wants to read them. It's not me. But then, you know, so that's why it wasn't in its original plastic until you told me to read it. I mean, there went my resale value on this book, right?
Yeah.
While I don't think I'll go as far as you did, like reading till 5, I think it's super interesting. And I think it brought up some great conversation about sexy comics and how Japan has more leeway for all kinds of stories with an erotic undertone to it. It can tell all kinds of hit all kinds of moods where they think the erotic comics in America maybe it's all about ooh, make me hot sailor, you know, kind of like pole dancing kind of thing.
Yeah.
Make me hot sailor. these World War II comics that you're talking about?
I mean, it's all cheesecake, right? It's all giant boobs and like, you know, like, oh, like the girl's like trying to make the guy
come up and see me sometime.
Yeah, you know, trying to make the guy get hot and bothered. And whereas this is like, I don't, maybe some guys get hot on this, but I think some people get really uncomfortable. So that's, I think what's fascinating about it, like there's some kind of story underneath the layers of breaded crispiness that is the porniness of it all.
Yeah.
But you're right. It made for a great conversation.
Yeah. Awesome. Chip?
But before my final thoughts, I really have to kind of highlight the final page of this. We talked about it briefly last time. It's so perfect as a final page to this, because they've taken what could possibly be a sexy scene and just drained it of all sex and made it as boring a shot as possible. Like, if you actually look at it, it's one of the only shots, maybe it's the only one panel, where it's just a one-point perspective, very, very flat. Almost everything has some sort of extra perspective line to it, except for this. It's so flat, it's so boring, it's so not sexy, and the kid sleeping in the foreground
with his mouth open,
is so funny. Like, I can imagine the artist finishing this page and just laughing to themselves, like, I can't believe I'm pulling this off here. This is unbelievable.
Someone's paying me for this.
Yeah. All the conversations about, like, is it sexy? Is it not sexy? Is it too much? Is it not too much? Like, I just found it funny. I found it quite funny, and in a way that I haven't found anything really funny in a long time, because I think we mentioned Lobo's paramilitary Christmas special last time. Like, during that period, I was into a lot of, like, kind of extreme, edgy humor stuff. The darker humor, the better. Like, people getting hurt and stuff. Like, I love that kind of stuff. Almost none of it holds up now.
Mm-hmm.
And almost nobody creates it now, kind of as a result of that shift in our social consciousness. So to actually read something like this, and with a creator with such a deftness to be able to, like, go extreme and also not make it that bad that you have to feel too bad about laughing along with it, it's really, you know, it's really impressive. And wish we could pull it off in North America, but I don't think there's anybody up to this.
It's
got to
be
frankly.
You, Chip.
I don't have it in me anymore. You know, it's funny, like, even just pointing out, like, that I thought that they were in their 20s. Like, I could do this in my 20s, maybe. But now I would just probably question a lot. And, like, I'm so far down a path. I'm like, well, but what's the theme? Like, I'm always asking myself, what's the theme of my story? What's the theme when Batman punches the Joker? Like, yeah, I know. It's like, it's horrible. It's horrible. That I can't just let myself just go, oh, I'm just going to make a fun comic. Maybe one day I'll get to that place again. But this reminds me that it's actually still possible.
Mm.
So thank you, David. 10 out of 10. I think we all agree it's 10 out of 10. A plus.
Unanimous.
This is the first manga explaining gold star that we're giving, right?
This is not going on the gold star. did you have a final thought you wanted to express to the group?
Yeah,
I do. I was actually prepared for one this time instead of handing it off like I usually do. But I mentioned that I'm usually more interested in violence in comics than sex. And there is a fight scene in volume 2 that's a mix of rope bondage and extreme violence. It includes a dog being thrown and electrocuted at one point. The good guys suck in this comic is what I'm saying.
Well, yeah.
It's the best. So yeah, like, I'm really glad we got such a good conversation out of this, because I do like things that are, like, edgier, like Chip was saying. But there's a very fine, like, I'm old enough to where I don't want, like, the garbage edgy. Like, I don't just want Faces of Death. Like, that sucks. It's just mean and evil. But the part, sometimes movies have funny beheadings, is all I'll say. If it's, like, a shock and a surprise. And this is one of those where you're like, I can't believe this is so funny. And yet I've been wiping my eyes this entire podcast thinking of the jokes that we've been talking about. Like, it's that funny to me.
Yeah.
So I had a good time. Thank you, everybody. And we're going to take a quick break and then come back with some Q&A.
C Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back. That was our Raw Hero discussion. I hope you had a good time and that you immediately went out and purchased as many volumes of the series as you can personally stand. We're going to close out with some Q&A. We've got a question from Think New Official on Twitter. That's N-U instead of N-E-W. Hey, Mangasplaining, are there any notable examples of mangaka being visibly influenced by Western superhero comics? And this is a good question because we've talked a lot about the reverse, you know, people influencing American or Western artists like Tsutomu Nihei and Nick Dragotta, for example. And I guess I want to ask the gang, like, I know Yusuke Murata, who draws One Punch Man, clearly has a big X-Men, like Jim Lee influence, for instance. But who else is on the list for you two, Deb and Chris? What do you think?
Well, I guess the obvious one is My Hero Academia.
Mm.
Kohei Horikoshi. He, like, some of the covers of My Hero Academia look like old Marvel cover formats, and All Might and the other American hero Star are very much modeled after American style superheroes, very muscular, very larger than life.
Yeah.
I don't know if necessarily the way that he draws comics is very American influenced, but I think he definitely has respect for American comics.
Mm-hmm.
And let his launching, his foundation of drawing a hero comic comes from that.
The way he draws All Might is really interesting because it seems almost, it doesn't resemble an American comic like you were saying, but it's almost like the idea of one, the way he's inked and shaded compared to the rest of the characters in the series is really fascinating.
It's like comparing like an American action figure to a Japanese action figure.
Like, yeah.
Like there's the American toy figures, like the male characters are super, the muscles are super defined and very like bodybuilder like, whereas the figures in Japanese are like very fluid and soft looking, you know.
Or I mean this is a bit of a diversion, but I never really thought about it before, like, but how did that start in American comics? Like, what is it about like North American comics scene or North American culture where like Extreme Muscle Man became the symbol of like just straight up masculinity?
I guess we just love strong men from the circus in the 1800s, and it just,
yeah,
that's like the root of it, right?
It's got to be, yeah. And then I guess when professional bodybuilding kind of became a thing, it probably originated in America. It feels like an American thing.
There are a lot of early comics too that adapt Western myth, like someone like a Hercules character or things like that. Like not quite as grotesquely over muscled as things kind of got in North America, but definitely. This like mythical hero is always in North American tellings is always like a big muscular dude. Whereas it's interesting. Yeah. I went to a temple in Japan and it had the guy, the god that first inspired sumo. And he is like, not as like big and fat as you might think of a sumo wrestler, but still pretty big dude, but has something closer to like a North American superhero muscle build. But it's this like statue from like 100 years ago. Like, it's really interesting that this, that these do exist in Japan, but for the most part, these kinds of like heroes are not big, muscular, like physically, like whatever dudes. And I think that that's actually one of the things that makes manga sort of look like Kamen Rider is like a muscular character, but would be like the skinniest dude on any Marvel superhero team. Like, even more than Spider-Man, depending on who's drawing him, you know?
Yeah, it'd be the Doug Ramsey of the... Put that in the show notes, Chris.
Yeah.
But that's America, right? I mean, like, a handgun would be sufficient to kill somebody.
Yeah.
But in America, you need a effing machine gun, like, that's giant and huge, and, like, it's gonna rip up a whole wall as soon as you hit the trigger. You know, so I think it's just like this evolution of, you think that's macho? Here you go. Like, and it's like steroids, you know, it's like, you can become a strong person by being a blacksmith, right? You build muscles, but I think it's only within the last 50 to 75 years that people can actively shape their body through chemicals and exercise in a really specific way. Yeah. Not building muscle because you are doing something, you know, labor intensive, like, and producing something. You are just producing muscles.
Yeah. I rewatched Enter the Dragon a couple months ago, and I was looking, I was like, wow, like, so when you watch, say, Fast and the Furious, you're never like, oh, I could get as buff as The Rock. But I feel like with work, I could be like as buff as Bruce Lee, which is a ludicrous thing to say, right?
But he's hot.
But if you look at it comparatively, like, Bruce Lee is way more attainable than The Rock.
Yeah, but I could easily off. Just be Bruce Lee.
I could just wake up, like, maybe a few crunches, I'd be good.
Yeah.
But Chris, what do you have
back
for
on topic.
Us?
Sorry, I digressed.
Well, that was me with my dumb question.
No, it was great.
No, it was good. It's funny because I was going to say before you went on a tangent that All Might in his depowered form looks like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, like Jonan Vasquez character.
It's true.
He looks like he's drawn in from like a completely different series than anything else that's going on, in the same way that All Might, when he's like in superhero form, looks like he's coming from American comics. He looks like it's like the scratchiest indie comics when he's not. And I think that's fascinating. I would love to have asked Horikoshi.
I wish someone had asked him, because I bet that would have been an awesome answer.
So yeah, I think that there are examples. It's more around the fringes, maybe. American superhero comics just weren't available in Japan for the longest time, or they were like super rare. Now even people like Chip can get published in Japanese, so it's happening a lot more.
Yeah.
Canadians?
There's a movement in the, like, just briefly, there was a movement called Nouvelle Manga that took place in like the early to mid 2000s. And it was about basically this French dude who lived in Japan and became a Japanese citizen named Frederick Wallet wanted to like build bridges between French comics, French bande dessinée and Japanese manga. And so he created this like idea of Nouvelle Manga, where they wrote this like manifesto, as an artistic manifesto. They published a lot of books that like had Japanese and French and European cartoonists sort of sharing with one another. One of my favorites from that is it's an anthology called Japan as Viewed by 17 Creators. And it's 17 stories about Japan. It was published in 2007, each by a different creator, sort of alternating between a European creator and a Japanese creator. And I checked before I mentioned it to make sure. It is technically out of print, but Book Depository has lots of copies in stock below cover price. So if you're looking for a good recommendation, I highly recommend that one. It's got Taiyo Matsumoto and Jiro Taniguchi in it, among many others. But the thing that always comes to mind, actually, when I think about like Western influenced on manga, is Minotaro Mochizuki, who made Dragon Head. We all, like, a certain age of manga fan, know Dragon Head. It's like such a good suspense thriller manga. I'll do the pitch, because it's available digitally. It's not unavailable. Group of kids, they're on a train, they're going on a field trip, they're on the Shinkansen, they're just about to go through a tunnel. They see Mount Fuji in the distance, and then there's a white flash, an explosion, just before they go into the train tunnel. Seconds later, an earthquake. The train derails inside of the tunnel. One boy wakes up. All of his classmates are dead, except one who's hunting him. Dun, dun, dun. Dragon Head, 10 volumes, published by Tokyopop back in the day. Really, really good.
It's available in digital from Kodansha, like in its entirety.
Available in digital from Kodansha. Go run out and get it. So it's really good. The next work that we see from him, from Minotaro Mochizuki sensei, literally looks like he took 4 years off and read nothing but Adrian Tomine and Daniel Clowes comics. And it's called Chisa Kobe. And it is like almost like a French bande dessinée, like Clear Line Tintin style, as filtered through, like, you know, the Clear Line work that Tomine, the simplicity, the like simplification of forms Tomine and Klaus did. And he's doing manga like this now. And so he's got like many, many volumes where it looks like Adrian Tomine or Dan Klaus moved to Japan and started making manga, except it's like this dude who drew 1,000% different like 5 years prior. And it's never been published yet. I think it would just really piss off Dan Klaus and Adrian Tomine. But I would love to see some of his work get published one day. He finally had a book published, and he did the manga adaptation of Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs, which I think is
Dark Horse.
It's like a meta joke that he did this adaptation. It was released in English. You can bet it in print, you can get it digitally. But yeah, that's like I'm going to put this in the show notes, but if you've ever wanted to see what like a Western influence might look like on manga, and you, and it's not, oh, I like to draw Iron Man. This is the this is the book for you. But yeah, there are absolutely Japanese mangaka who are influenced by Western comics, especially superhero comics. And honestly, Marvel publishes most of them. There have been books by Gurihiro that are definitely show Western influence.
There have
been books by Sana Takeda, who's had a Western influence on her work. Yeah, there's just like a ton of people that have, like, anytime you see a Japanese cartoonist working on a Marvel comic, it's because they love Marvel comics and they've internalized at least a little bit of that art style. And if they haven't internalized art style, they work on the books directly in Japan, and maybe they get translated through Viz a little bit later on. And I think that that's a really interesting thing.
The cartoonists that did the Tomine style work, like, what are the stories like?
They're slice of life, everyday weirdo
stories. Are they awkward? And
yeah, yeah. They, like, I mean, the they same? Are. It's. I've only read a little. They're available in French, which is how I actually discovered them. My French isn't good enough to sit down and plow through four volumes at 300 pages a piece. But I will say that, like, yeah, they're stories that are everyday stories that are a little bit weird, a little bit off the beaten path sort of a thing. And I think, Deb, you were going to mention, you were mentioning, you know, in the break, the work of, like, Bambi and His Pink Guns author.
Oh, Atsushi Kaneko.
Kaneko-sensei, yeah. He's someone who's drawn a Western influence, but again, it's not from superhero comics. Like, it's more from, like, David Lynch and, like, Rat Fink illustrations and things like that. So his work is, like, really, Charles Burns has been a really big influence on his work, and he's doing commercial, like, commercial-ish, I guess, comics for, like, Shogakukan and Kodansha and stuff like that, too. So, yeah, the Western influences don't always come in the way that you expect them to come, maybe, is something I want to say. And all images of all this will be in the show notes.
After interviewing manga creators for a couple of years, I've learned that there are a couple questions that will always bomb. One question is, asking a Japanese manga creator, which American superhero would you like to draw?
I don't even like that question.
Most, or like, what American comics have you read or do you like? And most times they'll say, I read none of them. I'm sorry, I don't have never read any of them. I've maybe seen Spider-Man movie. How about Spider-Man? They always say Spider-Man because they've at least seen the Spider-Man movies. So I guess sometimes what I find really funny is I think American comics fans sometimes think that American superhero comics are as popular as American superhero movies around the world. And that's just not the case.
Yeah. That's really not the case.
Yeah. I've got one last example. It's relevant to Chip, actually. There's a manga creator named Yukito Kishiro who did Battle Angel Alita. And back in the 90s, there was a one-shot for Battle Angel Alita, like a solo story, that ripped off a bunch of pages from Frank Miller's Electra Lives Again.
Oh, really?
With Lynn Varley? Yeah, it's super obvious, too. And it's not the dark side of, like, that kind of exchange. Like, you know, swipes happen. But it's interesting to see it in a manga almost, you know, like, line for line. Because it still fits the storytelling. You know, it fits, like, the vibe of that artist. But the influence is, like, a little bit too much. So it's, instead of an homage, it's a swipe.
I would love to see it. Like, is it characters, faces? Like, what is it?
You remember when they were fighting in the graveyard around the tombstone? That scene totally ripped off, like, all of the, the bodies. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. It's really, I mean, it's bad that plagiarism's obviously not something you should do, but, like, as someone who likes comics and likes manga and Western comics, it's like a cool window into what was making an impact at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. It's like, anti-plagiarism when it kind of directly affects things. But when it's so far removed, it's like, oh, that's just more interesting, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, oh, I'm so wounded that you copied my work halfway across the world in a market that doesn't really touch our market. Like,
it's like Todd McFarlane and Batman Year 2 having Akira backgrounds. Like, it's kind of the same thing.
I know. I just saw that. That was crazy. Like, it's not even just like, it's not even a trace. It's just like, it's exactly it.
A stat. Yeah. He's boxed it in. It's great. I love this kind of interplay because, you know, I love both, not genres. I love Western and Japanese manga, obviously. And seeing the way that both of my favorite things have influenced each other always kind of makes me like both more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this was a great question. Thank you very much for this question. And anyone have any shout outs? We can wrap it up and get some sleep.
Shout outs.
I just read, friend to all comic people, Alex Segura, He's got a new novel, Secret Identity, coming out, I think, in March, but I got a sneak peek at it. And it's a crime story set in like 1970s comic book publishing in New York. So it's super fun if you're a fan of that kind of period of comics. It just name checks just a ton of different like kind of writers and editors from that time. And just
that
kind of
super
the whole
up your alley. That's awesome.
I know, it's like kind of tailor made for me. So yeah, I super enjoyed it. It's one of those things when you're reading the work of a friend, especially a novel, like you got to make sure you read the whole thing. And I'm so glad I did, because at like the 93% mark, there's a character named Henry Zadarsky in it. And if I didn't read it and I didn't mention it, I would have been caught, man. I would have been caught. So good job, Alex.
I love it.
Oh, I have one now. I thought of one.
Yeah.
Okay. So I started reading webtoons, Korean scrolling comics. Mm-hmm. There's a webtoon called Batman, Wayne Family Adventures.
Oh yeah. I've been hearing a lot about this.
It's pretty adorable. It's basically like what life's like living in the Wayne Manor with all the different Robins and Nightwing, and they're just like a bunch of like a bickering family. And then it's kind of cute. I really enjoy it.
Do you remember when Hannah Blumenreich was doing all those Spider-Man comics?
Yes, yeah. I love that.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, it's kind of the same vibe where it's like the superhero stuff is fine, but like we want the relationships. We want the feelings.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm. Well, they're doing like a live action version of it too, aren't they?
Are they really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I saw some set photos of just like of all these characters.
Happy Batman?
Like, yeah, sitting around like the table or whatever, the dining room table. And I'm like, oh man, so good.
That rules. Yeah.
Mm. Awesome. I'll check it out.
I want to shout out Animal Crossing for coming back with new content. It's really been a savior for me this past week. It got me through some really shit times at the beginning of the pandemic and into the pandemic. And it was nice to go back and spend some time in that world this week when it was like a little rough. So shout out to Animal Crossing. I haven't even bought the DLC yet. I don't think I can afford that hit to my productivity, but just the regular new stuff is fine for me for now.
Cool.
Nice.
And to wrap it up, my shout out is for Mobile Suit Gundam Char's Counterattack, because I'm still obsessed with robots. I've evened out a little bit, but this movie was really good. Like Independence Day good.
Hmm. Wait, where is this playing? Is it streaming on somewhere?
Yeah, it's streaming on Netflix. It's essentially the ending to the original Gundam saga. So there's like the original series, there was the second series Zeta, and then the third series ZZ Gundam, which there's a ZZ Top joke in there I haven't been able to figure out yet.
I should probably, yeah.
You should definitely watch it. As long as you understand that the two main characters are on opposing sides, they're both kind of like the hotshot pilot, you'll pretty much grasp it. It's super moving, it's got a good anti-war message, and the fights are awesome. Like, I finished watching it 5 minutes before we started podcasting, so it's super fresh in my head.
Nice.
But cool. That was Manga Splaining. We discussed Raw Hero. We talked about some cool manga superheroes crossover influence stuff. And we will see you next week for yet more manga to be splained. This has been Manga Splaining, episode 38. Thanks for listening. For our next episode, we'll be discussing the manga Look Back. Want to pick up the copy? Usually, we tell you to consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop, and that you could find one near you at comicshoplocator.com, or to check out your local library for print and digital lending options. But this one is another digital exclusive, so please visit viz.com to read it. You can follow along with our complete reading list at mangasplaining.com. Thanks to DADS for their musical accompaniment this episode.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.